I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
This was an unprecedented victory since the Dobbs decision.
There are so many Americans that want to stand for life.
Americans vote on abortion in states across the country. A breakdown of the results.
We're optimistic that President Trump will come into office and undo some of the really terrible actions that were taken through the executive branch by President Biden and Vice President Harris.
Plus, experts weigh in on what the pro-life movement could look like in a new Trump administration.
I think Jenny is just that, the particular phenomenal skill set that she has, her brilliance, her motherhood, so many wonderful things about her, I think, are really what the organization needs now.
And the end of an era, as Jeannie Mancini, president of the March for Life, will step aside and help usher in the next leader of the largest pro-life witness in the U.S.
While I concede this election, I do not concede the fight that fueled this campaign.
So I want to thank the American people for the extraordinary honor of being elected your 47th president and your 45th president.
Donald Trump has been elected the 47th president of the United States, the first former president to regain power since President Grover Cleveland in 1892. President-elect Trump won both the electoral and the popular vote, taking 295 electoral votes and 50% of the popular vote. Vice President Kamala Harris won 226 electoral votes with 47.6% of the popular vote as of the taping of our show. His historic win caps an extremely competitive election season that included two assassination attempts targeting Trump and a shift to a new Democratic nominee from Joe Biden to Kamala Harris just a month before the Democratic National Convention. The pro-life movement did not have a strong ally in either candidate. Harris pushed an aggressive and radical abortion agenda during her campaign, promoting abortion without gestational limits and threatening to take away religious exemptions or conscience objections. Trump softened his once strong pro-life stance this election season, leaving it to the states to legislate, noting that he would not support a federal ban and also promoted taxpayer-funded in vitro fertilization. This election, we saw multiple state ballot measures focusing on abortion, as well as an underreported life issue, medically assisted suicide. The state of West Virginia is the first in the nation to pass an amendment prohibiting the participation in medically assisted suicide, euthanasia, or the so-called mercy killing of a person. The measure passed by just 1%, 50-49. This is the first time a state has proactively voted on banning assisted suicide, which is unfortunately being legalized in many countries and is already legal in several states here in the U.S. Voters in 10 states faced abortion measures that sought to enshrine abortion as a so-called right in state constitutions. While many of them passed, there were several victories for the pro-life movement, the first victory since Roe v. Wade was overturned. Three states, Colorado, Maryland, and New York, already have very liberal laws where abortion is legal in all 9 months of pregnancy. And not surprisingly, the abortion measure passed in all of these states. In Colorado and New York with 61% of the votes, Maryland with 74% of the votes, Colorado will also require Medicaid to cover abortion. New York's ballot measure was a little different, not only adding abortion as a right to the state constitution, but also adding language protecting so-called gender identity. That language has raised concerns about parental rights over minors who may be seeking gender transition surgery or medication. In Arizona, 61% of voters approved extending the abortion window from 15 weeks up to 24 weeks. Montana followed suit with enshrining their current 24-week abortion law into the state constitution, with more than 57% of the voters approving. Pro-abortionists argue viability, or when a baby can survive outside the womb, is 24 weeks.
They're claiming viability is at 24 weeks. Medical science has advanced so much that now viability in many places is actually as early as 22 weeks. So these amendments actually keep us in medicine from a decade or two ago.
Missouri was a big loss for the unborn, but it was a close race for Amendment 3. Abortion is illegal with limited exceptions in that state. But now, abortion will be expanded up until viability, that 24-week mark, with 51% of the voters favoring the abortion amendment.
I think it's encouraging that some of these states were close when it comes to the abortion ballots. And it shows that there are millions of Americans that truly value life and they want to protect life. Where we've seen losses, it's because there's misinformation.
Three states are celebrating pro-life wins. In South Dakota, the law there that protects babies during all 9 months of pregnancy will stay in place. 59% of the voters voted against Amendment G, which would have constitutionalized a so-called right to abortion in the first trimester, with loose wording allowing for abortion to the second and third trimesters. But the measure failed, and protections for the unborn remain. Nebraska is being considered a win for pro-lifers. The state is unique in that it had a dueling abortion ballot measures. 434 would keep the 12-week abortion ban in place, whereas Measure 439 would extend the window of allowing abortion until 24 weeks. But that extension to 24 weeks failed, so abortion will still be allowed up to 12 weeks of pregnancy, but is considered the lesser of two evils.
You could kind of make the case, and I imagine that this is what we might see in future cycles, that having that competing ballot measure caused a certain percentage of the electorate to say, well, I would have voted for the right to abortion measure if it was here by itself, but I'd rather vote for this one. So I'm going to kind of split my vote a little bit. So it's really interesting to see how that one played out.
And in Florida, a heartbeat law that went into effect earlier this year will remain the law of the land because an abortion measure failed to get the necessary 60% of the vote. But it was close. Some 57% of voters there wanted to constitutionalize abortion.
I want to thank Governor DeSantis. This is clearly a part of his leadership. You know, this is a result of him having a strong pro-life stance.
Despite more voters in favor of the abortion measure, it still failed because of that 60% threshold law.
For the first time this year, we now have three victories in three different states.
In Nevada, there is still time for the pro-life movement to make a dent. Their abortion measure needs to pass two different election cycles, this year and then again in 2026. The abortion measures did pass this first round, with 63% of the voters in favor of creating a constitutional right to abortion until fetal viability. We are joined today by Aaron Baer, president of the Center for Christian Virtue, and Katie Daniel, state policy director of Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. Aaron and Katie, thank you so much for being with us. I want to start with each of you sharing your reactions to the results. Are you surprised by anything that happened? Katie, you first.
Well, of course, we're thrilled for the lives that are saved in Florida, my home state, as well as in Nebraska and South Dakota. We also mourn those babies in the states where we were unsuccessful on the ballot to protect them and look forward to the fight going forward to protect their lives.
How about you, Aaron?
Yeah, overall, I am certainly surprised at how strong of a night it was for pro-life and pro-family candidates across the country. In Ohio, especially, too, you had a very strong pro-life candidate in Bernie Moreno, who did phenomenally well against an incumbent, a powerful incumbent in Sherrod Brown. But even beyond that, you saw pro-life candidates at the state level do really well.
That's incredible. Aaron, it is sad to see a pro-life state like Missouri, which had such strong protections for the preborn, to now allow abortion up until 24 weeks of pregnancy. Can you talk about why you think this measure passed there? Is it misinformation from pro-abortionists?
You know, there's a lot of different factors that go into why these abortion amendments are passing in states like Ohio and Missouri and Arizona. I think you can't ignore the massive financial advantage that the left has on these issues. I mean, the numbers of that they're throwing around is just astronomical. You also have to look at some issues we have in our state constitutions, right? Florida was able to successfully beat their abortion amendment because they had wise policy in place. And this is one of these things that pro-lifers, we need to not just look at the issue of what our policy is regarding abortion, but also look at our policies and procedures in place, like protecting our constitutions with thresholds like 60%. Ultimately, though, we have to acknowledge we live in a culture that now that after 50 years of legalized abortion sees abortion as a maybe even worse than a necessary evil. Some people see it as a good, and we need to address those issues. And even within our churches, you know, here in Ohio, we saw 1 out of 3 weekly attending churchgoers vote yes on the abortion amendment here just last year. So it's certainly unbelievably disheartening, but it's a wake-up call of some big issues we need to address.
It's a big wake-up call. Katie, do you think any of the pro-life measures that won in Florida, South Dakota, or Nebraska will see appeals or lawsuits against them?
Well, fortunately, these were decisive victories. Nebraska is a state where, because they had 2 initiatives, there was anticipated litigation. But in fact, in Nebraska, the pro-life amendment passed while the pro-abortion amendment failed. So I think that we will not see as much as we expected. In Florida, there's ongoing litigation because there are major problems with the signature gathering process. There are already people who have been prosecuted over falsifying signatures in Florida. So I think we'll see that continue because, as Aaron said, this is a major election integrity issue, and voters deserve honesty and transparency around getting to the ballot and around that process.
It's so true. Aaron, Amarillo, Texas, sought to ban abortion travel in their city this election. That measure failed. What is the path towards more successful pro-life measures? Is it providing a lesser of two evils option like what happened in Nebraska? Or do you think it's going down to the city level, which proved unsuccessful for Amarillo?
You know, I think right now for the pro-life movement, I think all options need to stay on the table, right? There's not a silver bullet on all of these things that are going to address these issues. I love the concept that they brought forward in Amarillo, and I think this we shouldn't necessarily dismiss this now just because it failed. I think there's other things that can still be done. I think that unfortunately in states like Ohio, we're going to see a lot of women get hurt by the abortion industry now, by them shipping abortion pills over the counter, things like that. I think for us to really start highlighting the harms that these dangerous abortion laws are going to have on women and building out and telling the stories of the gruesome things that are being done to children are going to be important. And there's going to be some areas that we can pass laws related to those issues and issues related to sort of reporting and telling the honest facts in these states like Ohio that have abortion laws in place. But it's going to be the beginning of a long road that we have to take to save lives in these states.
Yeah. Katie, President-elect Donald Trump will take office in January. What do you think pro-lifers can expect to see from this administration? And with the Senate in hand, do you think there will be a federal abortion ban?
We're optimistic that President Trump will come into office and undo some of the really terrible actions that were taken through the executive branch by President Biden and Vice President Harris. Defeating Harris-Waltz extremism on abortion was huge. It's clear that the American people repudiated it. This was the only issue that the National Democrats ran on, literally the only one. It was their top spending issue in their ads, and the American people rejected it. So I think there's a real opportunity to fight back against all the bad pro-abortion things that they've been doing, including trying to spend taxpayer dollars on abortion and go back to being a pro-life administration like Trump's first term. As far as what Congress might do, you know, we're celebrating the win. We look forward to speaking to some of these new members of Congress about their priorities, about what animates them. But at the end of the day, there are still hundreds of thousands of babies in states where they are not protected. And so we've got to continue at the state and federal level to look at all of our options to protect their lives.
Thank you both so much for sharing your perspectives. Our sister news organization, the Catholic News Agency, is tracking all of state ballot initiatives. Visit their website, catholicnewsagency.com, to hone in on your state's ballot measures and learn more. EWTN News reporters traveled to the battleground states of Pennsylvania and North Carolina on Election Day to talk to voters as they cast their ballots. What we learned in our voter interactions on EWTN News in Depth Friday night at 8 Eastern. Coming up, our exclusive interview with the current and future presidents of the March for Life. EWTN News' Montse Alvarado sat down with these incredible pro-life leaders to discuss the future of the movement. Stay with us. We'll be right back. the March for Life is just around the corner. 2 years after the overturning of Roe v. Wade, the fight for the preborn is far from over. This year is the end of an era for the annual event, as the current president, Jeannie Mancini, will be stepping down. She will be passing the baton to Jenny Lichter. EWTN News' Montse Alvarado sat down with both of them to discuss the future of the march and the pro-life movement.
Jenny and Jeannie, having both of you here is such a joy to see this transition from a great legacy coming out of the March for Life into this new era, post-Roe era, to really dive into where the culture is going and how life needs to be defended. I want to ask you both about this theme, life, why we march. Let's start with you, Jeannie. What does this theme mean to you?
Yeah. So every year when we're choosing a theme, we really try to speak into what's happening in the culture, because of course the March for Life is where all of the different pro-life groups come together, and really choosing a theme gives us a springboard to impact whatever's happening, like what are the most pressing needs. And perhaps not surprisingly, I mean, people are discouraged right now. That's our sense, at least, that we've had this massive victory of the overturn of Roe, but we've lost at the state in a number of these ballot initiatives. We've seen elected officials separate themselves from this issue. And people are wondering even about the abortion numbers. In some states, it's up. In some states, down. So there are a lot of questions. We want to encourage marchers. We want to remind them that they're on the right side of history. One of the best ways to do that is to return to the basics, kind of pro-life 101. Where are we pro-life? And then also, why are you pro-life? You know, people's stories are so powerful. And for over 10 years at the march, we've had this hashtag for all of our social media endeavors, which is why we march. And that is really an invitation for marchers to tell their story. And every story is unique, and those stories are beautiful. And so that's really the hope with the theme.
It's a beautiful personal witness. Well, Jenny, walking into this for you, what does that resonate with you, that theme? Would you have chosen the same?
Yes, absolutely. I think Jeannie explained the theme wonderfully and why the organization chose it. For me personally, it's a really meaningful theme for my first March for Life at the organization, because I have been a marcher since 2001. I've attended many marches for life in the past number of years. So I have a story about why I march, and why I marched as a college student and a young professional with my husband when we were newlyweds, with my children more recently. And I'm excited to keep telling that story and to hear the stories from every marcher, because as Jeannie said, every marcher has a story just like mine.
Your hope in this theme is to renew energy and drive. And that, as you mentioned, is important now when you're seeing such a divided landscape and so many fronts that you have to fight on. How does that kind of create a roadmap for what you want to do next?
Well, you know, in 2019, we began the State March Initiative, and little did we know that so many things would get lined up in place that ultimately Roe would be overturned just a few short years later. And so that State March Initiative has been all the more important. This year alone, we're in 17 states, and we plan to be in all 50 states, certainly under Jenny's tenure, is my guess. Soon. And so that is all the more important as we rally people at the states. We need to continue rallying at the national level, both because we want to pass good legislation at the federal level, but also because the march is about more than just passing legislation. It's been famously said that culture is upstream of politics, and we want to change culture. We want to march until abortion is unthinkable.
Now, Jenny, you have seen, or you're walking into this post-Roe reality where the rise of abortion pills, especially at the state level too, seeing abortion pills being sent from one state to another, is just where the fight is going. How do you see that being something that you have to counter or address as the new head of the march?
I think it's really important for the pro-life movement and for the March for Life to keep reminding people that the abortion pill is so dangerous for women, and especially the way in which it's being distributed more and more often as regulatory parameters are being removed. Women are able to access the abortion pill without medical care and take it themselves at home. And that is so risky, and sometimes has tragic results, as we've seen in the news even just recently. And I think, too, it's really important for the pro-life movement and for our organization to keep making sure that women know what to do if they have started taking the abortion pill regime and they regret it and they want to turn it around and to save their baby, because that sometimes is possible to do if you do it in a timely way. And some states are starting to push back against that and trying to outlaw making the abortion pill reversal regime available. And that is such a tragedy and also really dangerous for women. So I think that's something we're going to be talking about, too.
It's important to think about these stories and why women get abortions. And it's something that the March for Life has done very well under Jeannie's leadership, telling us about these women, the circumstances, and what we can do to help, what the pro-life movement really exists to do. I recently had a woman tell me about the silent surprise baby abortions. Moms, maybe of two or three children, who get pregnant a couple of years down the line, maybe when their kids are in high school or middle school, and decide, this is just bad for my family. And they make the tragic decision of ending their baby's life. Research states that between a fourth and a fifth of American women who are already moms get abortions. And that number is only going up. Mm. What is going on here? Mm.
Yeah, this is horrific. And it's so sad to hear. So I think at its heart is a misunderstanding about sort of our plans for life and our control sort of over our life, and a sad sort of reflection upon if things are just, you know, a certain way and tidy, that my life will go a certain way. And I think perhaps one of the ways to counter this is some of the beautiful stories that we hear. I mean, even in my own family, my little brother was a surprise, you know, and he's just, like all of the kids in our family, I mean, just so special. And now as a father of three himself. But there are so many wonderful stories of people being surprised, you know, facing, as we say, an unexpected pregnancy. And I think what's most important is just to recognize that, you know, choosing abortion, it's not like taking any eraser to something and just erasing it and making it not there, you know, temporarily. It's actually taking a life and ultimately impacting the life of the mom as well. And so we'll do our part to get the word out there about this sad trajectory.
Is there something that you want to add about the way that the pro-abortion movement kind of limits your ability to think about what could be, rather than just what is?
Yeah, I think one of the most, really the most tragic things about pro-abortion rhetoric is the messaging to young women that motherhood holds you back, and that it's at odds with personal and professional flourishing and fulfillment. And that, you know, maybe having two or three kids is okay, but if you have any more, then, you know, then your life is going to fall apart. And I hope that my own experience as a mom, as I step into this more visible role, can be a lived counterexample to that, a counter witness. I have three kids, 10 and under, and they are a part of my flourishing and fulfillment. They're certainly not at odds with it whatsoever.
Do you think that that's part of the beauty of the march, that it's always had a female leader, always had someone who was, you think of Nellie Gray's example, someone who is a trailblazer for other women in considering what needs to exist and how to take care of the whole person. For you, as someone who's in policy, internationally recognized speaker, a renowned attorney, both for government and for the church, are your witnesses, your stories, an important part of the march as well?
Sure. The real hero at the March for Life are the marchers. Like, that's the real hero of the March for Life. But let's face it, that the other side, what we're fighting is essentially a lie that the right to abortion is good for women, or that abortion is good for women. And people like Jenny and me and you, Monsi, our lives are paradigmatically showing that's not the case. That isn't the case. That I thought Jenny just articulated it so beautifully, that to be a mother, to have the capacity for motherhood, however you're living that out, is an invitation to the full human flourishing, and that abortion really is just the antithesis of empowering for women.
Now, Jenny brings something very different in terms of skill set and background to the March for Life. What is your hope for her, knowing that this is a difficult task, a spiritually challenging task, and one where you are countercultural just by saying yes to the call.
Yeah. Cardinal Dolan one time said to me so beautifully, it meant so much to me, that Nelly was what was needed at that time for culture as well, and also just for running the March for Life, and that in the present moment when I was having the conversation with him, I was what, you know, my personality, sort of how I messaged, et cetera, was really what was needed. And, you know, there is this beautiful saying, the Holy Spirit gives to the church what she needs for a particular time period. And the March for Life being a pro-life organization, I think Jenny is just that, the particular phenomenal skill set that she has, her brilliance, her motherhood, so many wonderful things about her, I think, are really what the organization needs now.
When you think about the future of the march and what you're inheriting, is there something that makes you nervous or excited?
Oh gosh, I'm so excited. I mean, I've been coming to the March for Life for so many years, and it's so special to me. And I have admired first Nellie Gray when I first started attending the march, and then Jeannie for so many years, have just watched her and admired her leadership of the march at the event itself and in the media and all the ways in which she has led in the pro-life movement. So I am honestly just floored that this call came to me, and I'm so grateful to Jeannie for trusting me and asking me to consider this, and to the Lord for opening my heart to saying yes to it. And I just am so excited and humbled by this opportunity. I really can't wait to get started.
It's great to chat with both of you.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you.
The March for Life steps off January 24th. EWTN will provide team coverage of this annual event starting at 8 a.m. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.